making a difference, one cup at a time. So be sure to grab your tea, grab a seat, and tune in to Miss Liz. Tea time, making a difference, one cup at a time. Well, welcome to Tea Time. Yes, we are a little behind schedule, but you know what? Canada got hit with snow. That's right. We had grass yesterday. Today we have snow. So, you know, temperature sometimes has some little techno issues, but we're here and we're live and we have Corey Poirier in the house. That's right. Today is Canadian Day. I had Sandy Boucher from Thunder Bay this afternoon, and now I have Corey in the house, and both of them are incredible speakers. So let's get the bio going, let's get the disclaimer going, and let's get Corey in here and let's spill a tea of trustworthy enthusiasm and amazing. That is his tea that he'll be serving tonight, along with a bunch of other good goodies that we have going on. So let's get started. Tea time and the disclaimer for Miss Liz's Tea Time Live Show. Miss Liz and myself is going live using StreamYard. Before leaving a comment, please grant StreamYard permission to see your name at StreamYard.com. Please be advised that the content brought forward for any Tea Time show hosted by myself, Miss Liz, is always brought forward in good faith. However, may bring forth dialogues and opinions that are not represented on my platform. The facts and information are perceived to be accurate at the given time of airing. All Tea Time guests and audience participants are responsible for using their good judgment in taking any action that may relate to the discussion. The content brought forward may include discussions for some where they may be emotionally at risk. It is significant to know that this show is engaging in discussion forums only to offer and inspire awareness and connection and is not providing therapeutic advice. If you have any questions about the disclaimer, or the panelist discussion, you may freely contact me, Miss Liz, through my email at bookingmissliz@gmail.com. Moving forward, should you choose to voluntarily participate in tonight's show in any aspect, I myself, Miss Liz, welcomes you. And should you decide that the show is not made for you this time, I respect those wishes and will see you at a later date and a later show in the future. Again, all Tea Time shows are done on Thursdays, 3 p.m. and 7 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, unless there's weather conditions like tonight. And if you see a Tea Time on a Monday or Tuesday, it's a returning Tea Time guest or it's a surprise Tea Time guest that somebody has reached out and Miss Liz is like, oh, yeah, I need that on here. We need to get this out there. So now a little bit on Corey. Well, who is Corey? Corey Poirier is a multi-time TEDx, Mo Monday, and PMX speaker. He is also the host of the top-rated Let's Do Influencing radio show, founder of the speaking program, founder of Blue Talk, and he has been featured in multiple television specials and is a Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Apple Books, and Kobo best-selling author. He's a columnist for Entrepreneur and Forbes magazine. He has featured on CBS, CTV, NBC, ABC, and is Forbes Coaches Council member, and is one of the few leaders featured twice on the popular Entrepreneur on Fire show. He has also interviewed over 6,500 of the world's top leaders, and he has spoken on this on-site at Harvard. So if you want to know more about him, you have to go over to Miss Liz's Facebook page and like that. But before we get Corey in here, run over to Miss Liz's YouTube channel, get that little doorbell, a little ring, and you can watch these Tea Times at any time. If you have any questions or comments, you can send them directly to me, or you can send them directly to Miss Liz's Facebook page, and I'll get those up to Corey tonight. So let me get Corey in here. Welcome, Corey.
Thank you so much. So great to be here, and super excited to make some magic happen.
Well, that's what we like. We like magic, right? We like that magical tea to just flow and spill some goodness.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Corey, let's get started. Let's just go really deep. We're going to bring you into when you were a little boy into who you are now as a grown man. How did it all begin?
So that is deep in the sense that that's a long journey from there to here. And it's not that it feels long, you know, it's like, as we say, as you get older, everything seems to move quicker, but I just mean in the sense that a lot has happened in between then and now. And, but the start was, I was raised by a single mother. I grew up in a small town. My father wasn't a big part of my life. I was okay, mediocre in a lot of the things that I did. And I say that meaning like I started playing guitar when I was younger, and I was terrible and couldn't tune a guitar by ear. And I had a girlfriend tell me to stop singing because I was hurting her ears and that type of thing. But even in school, like I barely graduated high school. I got a 49 plus one in one of my classes, which I needed a 50. That told me that the teacher gave me the plus one. So I didn't even, I always say now I legally graduated, but I don't know if I technically graduated. And so my start wasn't glamorous. Like I said, I was raised by a single mother. Well, we had not a lot of those times, but we had times whenever it was like, we're not going to be able to buy groceries this, you know, this week until payday type thing. And, you know, we had to use sometimes collectible coins. I remember one time to buy subs for supper. Like it was, you know, not poor, but definitely lower middle class, I guess you could say, upbringing. And then my mother got together with a guy, and then we were middle class, you know, like it was just a little bump up. But I basically, like I said, I just kind of, I don't want to say coasted, but it wasn't like anything glamorous or Hollywoodized in terms of my childhood. And then honestly, I left school without knowing the difference between fiction and nonfiction, which is kind of relevant to the fact that now I'm into the book writing world and stuff, and even do some editing, and yet I barely graduated, and also didn't know, you know, what fiction versus nonfiction meant. And still to this day, I haven't really ever kind of fully, everything for me has been like sort of self-taught. So when I think of nonfiction, I think not made up. That's how I think of it. I think fiction is like pixies and fairies. And then I think nonfiction is the opposite of that. So it's not made up. It must be the real stuff. And so having said that, also, I didn't read a book until age 27, which surprises a lot of people because I read so much now. And so I say all that, Liz, to say that that's kind of my journey in terms of up until things sort of changed for me. And the change, I mean, for early 20s, I battled hypochondria and generalized anxiety for 4 years. So like, certainly wasn't Mr. Positive by any stretch. And what changed is one night I got tricked into performing stand-up comedy, and I still hold firm that I was tricked. But basically I ended up on a stand-up stage and I bombed, as we call it in stand-up. Like I was terrible. I got no laughs. But people at the office the next day said, did you meet someone? Because you seem like a different person. Like, did you meet, fall in love or whatever? And that was the first clue around what this thing I call vitamin P now. So vitamin P for passion or purpose. And I say it's the only vitamin you can't buy in the stores and probably the most important one you'll ever take. But that's when my life shifted. I got performed stand-up comedy by happy accident. But then that allowed me to discover professional speaking, which was terrifying to me to begin with. But I eventually went down that pattern and path. And that's when everything started changing for me. Like I started speaking while performing stand-up. I ended up performing stand-up 700 shows over 9 years. I ended up starting to play music in clubs and do mini tours and release CDs. Like all that stuff sort of started happening in alignment with me kind of finding a passion. And I don't know if you want to stop there and explore any of that, but that's kind of, that brings you up to where my life sort of changed a little bit.
Well, what I really like about it, Corey, is the passion and the purpose. And you're that underdog story, right? You're like me. We come from a hard life, but we turned it around for ourselves, right? And I love stories like yours, Corey, because it shows the listeners and my audience that, you know what, you can come from nothing and make something, you know? And you're encouraging people to really stand up and say, you know what, you can change it. Look at it, at the age of 27, you read your first book and now you're writing books. You know what I mean? We can change the destiny of our own story. And what I really liked about you, Corey, when your publicist and that reached out to me, was I was like, absolutely, I want to hear Corey's story, because Corey has a story. Corey has that back underdog story, you know, where everyone was like, don't the girlfriend, don't play the guitar, you know, close my ears. Now look at, you're doing music and you're doing the comedy, and you know what I mean? It shows people the growth, and it shows that you took the steps for yourself to make that difference. And now you're an incredible speaker, and you've been featured all over, and you've done all these incredible jobs. And it shows that you didn't stay where you came from. There's nothing wrong with where we come from, but we also have the power to change where we want to go, right?
So true. 100%. Yeah, I couldn't agree more.
Yeah. And what I like about your story, Corey, is you're like my brother. You're like that underdog brother that I have, because a lot of people are like, Miss Liz, like, did you get a silver spoon? No, I got a tea at the age of four. And this is where the tea comes from. It, you know, wasn't this COVID thing that came out. Miss Liz is serving tea. No, Miss Liz has been serving tea since I was four. Like, you know, and I like the words you gave me, Corey. So I want to get into those words, because you gave me some really incredible words. And I like that you gave me trustworthy, because you just shared your backstory, and I want to get into that word trustworthy. It must have been hard for you to trust.
It was to some degree. I mean, I want to say it was hard, but it wasn't as hard as I feel it is for a lot of other people. And what I mean by that is, as I mentioned, I was raised by a single mother, and my father wasn't an active part of my life. So I feel like, ultimately, that it would have been easy to not trust, because in a lot of ways, like my father, you know, it would be like the Sunday he's supposed to come and visit me, and he didn't. And, you know, all of a sudden it's like, my mother's kind of like, I remember her coming out to the step and saying, you know what, champ, you got to come in. I don't think he's showing up to this week. Like, there was those things that happened. And it was literally like made for TV movie special, in the sense that it happened every now and then, just like you see it in TV whenever the father doesn't show up. What I'm getting at is that I kind of view it as it was just a part of the scars that helped me become who I am. And I don't have any zero resentment towards him. I literally think he just didn't know how to be a father. And quite honestly, I would have rather that than him being an abusive father or in my life but neglectful. Like, what I'm saying is, I understood that his father didn't really know how to be a father. He didn't know how to be a father. And if you met him in the street, you would say he's the nicest dude ever. Like, he's a super guy. It's nothing to do with him, but those things, I'm kind of surprised myself. They didn't make it harder for me to trust people. But I think it's probably because I had some grounding from my mother. My grandfather raised me. He was like he became sort of the surrogate father. My grandmother was a part of that too. My father's mother was really an important part of my life. So I had a support circle almost. But the trustworthy part to me is probably, it's more so how I feel in terms of other people. Like, if I'm working with somebody, if I'm doing business with somebody, and I know they lied to me, and it could be the smallest thing they lied about, it makes it really, really hard for me to do business with them. So what I mean by that is, like, you know, the situation where somebody, you're with them, and they say something about somebody else, and let's say somebody calls them and they said something about them, and then they act like they're really nice to them, but then they get off the phone and they're not. And then the way they did that verbally, you heard a certain change in the voice that you're not used to. And then you hear them do it to you. Yeah. Or you send them a message and they say they didn't get it. But then, just a weird example, you can see it's red, and then they tell another friend what was in the message that they're not supposed to even have gotten.
Right. Like,
once that happens, it's like, for me, trust is gone.
Yeah.
And I'll give you a different example, but it's a real business example, is we worked with a VA company. And they were overcharging us from my perspective. And we basically found out that we're still not sure if the VAs were submitting more hours than they were working, or if the company was submitting the full hours and then only paying them the hours they submitted. We don't know who did what. But after it all came out, they're like, oh, we'll fix it all now. And we'll refund this and we'll make it better. And then you can trust us. And I was like, no, but I can't. Like, I know. Like, it was like, I'll give you a weird example of how we found it. One side of it is, on WhatsApp, one of the VAs messaged us and said, I need to make more hours. Like, I need to make up my full hours this week because my car broke down, let's say. And then yet the company had submitted her for the full hours, the very full hours she could possibly work. So something's wrong there when one person's saying, I didn't work enough hours anymore, but yet the company that's billing you is billing you for the full hours, saying she worked the full hours.
Absolutely. So
if I were reading into that, I would think that the VA is actually the one that's being messed over, because if they're billing full hours, let's say it was 20 hours, and let's say it was $20 an hour, that means they're billing me for $400. But if she only submitted for 10, they're only paying her $200. So that's in addition to what I'm paying to work with them in general. What I'm saying is if she thinks if she's begging us for more hours, that means she's not getting paid the full hours. And yet I'm paying the full hours, so somebody's getting that money. It's even harder for me. It would be easier to trust them if the VA was lying to them as well. But when I see that whole circumstance, it looks like the company is the one that's not trustworthy. And so for me, when I say trustworthy, that's what I mean. Being able to trust. Like, I would rather lose money on somebody I can trust than make money on somebody I can't.
That's a good point, Corey, especially in the business world, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like we really need to, you know, sometimes we need to invest in something that we know that they're trying their best, but they just don't have it, right? And then you have this company that is, oh, no, we're going to give it all to you. We're going to do it all for you, but you have to give us a little bit more and a little bit more and a little bit more. You know, we really need to have a transparency when we're working in the business world, because we're not transparent, it's eventually going to get seen and it's going to not be good for you. So, you know.
Absolutely.
So, Corey, I want to get into your second letter, your E, your enthusiasm. Did I say it right? Enthusiasm. Yeah. My French is kicking in. Okay. So why'd you give me that word for your letter E, Corey?
Well, I guess, a little bit of a backstory. I mentioned, I think, that one of the books that changed it. I mentioned the first book I read, I believe, which was Dale Carnegie's How to Win Friends and Influence People. But the book that sort of, I'm going to say, changed everything for me was a book called Think and Grow Rich. And it's a book by Napoleon Hill. For a lot of people, they view it as the game-changing book that has changed a dramatic amount of lives. And so what's interesting about that book, you heard me talk earlier about vitamin P, which I say is passion and or purpose. And so enthusiasm is basically a different word for that. And on one hand, you know, I wanted to make it fit because it's an E word that really speaks to me. So, you know, if you had P in there, I would have used passion or purpose. But I normally could say, okay, it's the same meaning, it's identical. But where enthusiasm speaks to me just in a different way is because in Napoleon Hill's Think and Grow Rich, that's the word he uses. Enthusiasm, desire and enthusiasm instead of, and this is probably because the book was written in 1937. They probably didn't use the word passion then. They said enthusiasm. That guy's got lots of enthusiasm. He's excited. But I think enthusiasm.
But back then you didn't talk about passion, right?
I don't think they knew what that was. Some people were happy at the job. Some people weren't, but it was just like they're happier. They're not. And I think enthusiasm kind of encompasses multiple things. Like it's passion. I think like you're really excited about what you do, passionate about it. But also I think it's like excited as well. So almost like on fire about it. So to me, like you can be passionate about it, which means you love it, you're obsessed with it, what have you. But then enthusiasm also means you're excited about it too. So I kind of think they're almost separate words, but they work together. So to me, enthusiasm is I come at things excited to tackle it. That's what that means to me.
I like that. Come at things. It's like I'm coming in the room, right? And as a public speaker, that's how you got to think, right? I'm coming in the room. I'm coming to the stage and I'm going to give it to you. I'm going to give you the show, right? I want to get into your A, which is amazing, Corey. So what's amazing?
So, as you can probably tell, I really kind of thought this stuff through in the sense that there's usually a story behind the story. You know, there's usually a reason for. But amazing is a bit different to me because it's really, I'm going to say it for two angles. It's really, to me, when I think of something being amazing, it's like, this is something that is like, wow, exciting. Like this could change my life. But the flip side of that is I find these days, a lot of people use words very loosely. Like this was brilliant. This was amazing. Like that person was brilliant. They counted 10 plus 10. You know, like what I mean is like, yeah. It's like people now are using, it's like everything's amazing. Everything's brilliant. And to me, I think words matter. And so for me, when it comes to amazing, I think part of it is I want to put it out there because I wanted to point out the fact that really, I think amazing means it's special. Like, it's, this is wild. This is crazy. This is special. This is something that I can't believe this happened, or I can't believe this exists, or what have you. Like, when Steve Jobs created the iPhone, that's amazing. Like, that was an amazing thing. Like, whether you like Apple or Steve Jobs or not, it's still amazing to think he created something that you can hold in your pocket, that can play music, that you can watch live video on, and so on and so forth. You know, the equivalent of a computer that costs like $50,000 not that long ago in your pocket. Like, that's amazing to me. That's big. Or somebody that, you know, like, I grew up in a small town. It's kind of a big deal to have grown out of the small town and done some things that you probably were told when you were younger you shouldn't do. That's amazing to me. Or, you know, like, I'll just use a weird example, but the band Pink Floyd. I was a big fan of Pink Floyd over the years. And so they put out an album called The Wall, which was my Desert Island CD, because it was the one where I felt every time I listened to it, I heard something new on the album. But what's amazing to me is that they not only put out an album like that, I mean, that album was mostly, for music buffs, that album was mostly written and created by Roger Waters. But another album they put out, Dark Side of the Moon, which is Roger Waters and a little bit more of David Gilmour, for a lot of other people, is just as fascinating as The Wall. And that's amazing to me that somebody, that a band can release two epic albums that are equally as epic, even though the Dark Side of the Moon might not be my jam as much. I know it's equally as epic as The Wall, and they're both concept albums. And to do that twice in a career is amazing. You know, or and I'll finish this off by saying, like, Paul McCartney going from being in the Beatles, being one of the most successful songwriters of all time, and then going on, and just like John Lennon, to have a pretty epic solo career is amazing to me. Because how many artists, if they're in a band, they never make it solo, or if they're a solo artist, they never make it in a band. It's very rare to strike lightning twice in that world. And so, to me, those are things I look at and say, that's amazing. Not like, oh my God, I opened the door twice today. That's amazing.
I really love it, Corey, because I am so with you. Words matter. And this is why we use words for tea on Tea Time, because I want to see the words that people are using and understand what they see when they use these words. You gave us a prime example of the word amazing. You know, a lot of people say, oh, that's amazing. Oh, that's beautiful. Oh, that's fun. Oh, you're strong. You know what I mean? There's a lot of words that people use that I find that they overuse sometimes. And it's just like, it's like blah, 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 blah. It's like going to a boring conference and everybody's just blah, 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 right? I'm just like, okay. And everybody's leaving. Oh, that was amazing. That was amazing. Okay, what did you get from it? Oh, I don't know. Well, obviously it wasn't amazing, was it? Like, you know, let's be transparent and let's be honest about it. And as a public speaker and as a writer, Corey, I can see that you look at things deeply. I want to talk about the book, because you have this book that came out and it's called, let me see what the book's called here. The Enlightening Passenger, The Flight That Changes Everything. Just those words, just that title is kind of like, oh, I want to know more.
So, I mean, so I'll say, as far as the book itself, in terms of, because I know we're live, so it's a little different than if, as you know, a lot of interviews you do are pre-recorded. So I can talk as if the book, you can go buy it right now and that type of thing. Where we're live, I will say there's two options with the book. So, because you said it's going to be out soon. It's technically out now.
Okay.
As a pre-order book. Here's the catch 22. When we... Tomorrow, we're finishing up the website, which, you know, we might call the funnel, but the website where you go buy it. And the benefit of going on the website to buy it, you still click on and go to like Barnes & Noble, Amazon, Walmart, Target, but you come back with your order number and you get a bunch of cool bonuses. So if people are listening live right now and they wait till tomorrow, they'll be able to get those bonuses. And we have a really epic bonus I can tell people about that isn't on the website. That's one option. The other option is, if you wanted to get it right now, if you just don't even listen to that. Now, bear in mind, it's pre-order, so it's not going to land at your house tomorrow anyway. So to me, waiting an extra, as long as you make sure to go back and do it, waiting to get those bonuses to me is worth it. But it's on all the sites now as a pre-order. And tomorrow, the website will be up. And I'll answer your question, but tomorrow, I'll just say tomorrow, the website will be up at thisisthebook.com. So this is thebook.com. And basically, when you go there, it walks you through the steps, but you pick your preferred retailer You go and order it. You grab your order number, come back and put it in. It'll tell you where, but put it in the space where it says get your bonuses here. And then literally the email comes and you get five bonuses. The bonuses we have are I did a talk at Stanford University that I've never aired around what I discovered that the top experts, the top companies that charge more, what they do differently. Like what are the common threads that allow them to charge more? And then there's three videos by the founders of Mind Movies where they talk about setting goals and creating the life of your dreams and launching a business as a couple and a bunch of those things. You get access to a new version of my book, Get Paid to Speak. You get access to a training around how to land a branded talk, like a TEDx talk, which is really a smaller version of a $5,000 program we sold for years. And then the fifth one is it's a top 10 insights guide PDF based on the insights I've learned during all these interviews, like the top 10 of that I've learned during these interviews. That's the free bonuses you get if you literally go tomorrow once it's up, order your copy, put in your order number. What's really wild, though, what we decide to do, and we haven't announced this, I don't even know how we're going to even bring this together. So it's got, at first, it's going to be manual. But what we're going to do is for people, we do a boot camp a few times a year. And it's basically, it's a three-day weekend virtual boot camp. We bring on really big name speakers. I cover speaking, writing your book, podcasting. We let people pitch podcasters to get guest spots. You get a free, you can pick one free laser coaching session with a coach of your choice that we have at the event. We give away mega prizes and all this stuff, and it's free for the weekend. Well, we used to offer it at $97 with the recordings, and people wanted the recordings in case they couldn't make it. Then we switched to offer for free a couple times, and people were complaining that it was free because they wanted the recordings. But the recordings take so much work that it would cost us as much as we made by offering the recordings at $97. Well, what I decided to do this time, because it's a win-win, it helps the book launch, is I said if people go buy the book at three separate places, the book's like $16.95, I think, US, so it's probably like 19 Canadian, but buy the book at three places, it costs you less than $60 Canadian, and send us the order numbers. And what we'll do is we'll also give you access to the boot camp and the recordings as well. Well, so those five bonuses and the rest. So I know I went down a big rabbit hole there when you just asked about the book.
No, that's good. That's good. I like going down the rabbit hole. I'm Miss Liz. I like Alice in Wonderland. I like the rabbit.
Okay, well, that's cool, because I went down that rabbit hole because it's a long way to explain. The book is really available now, and that, you know, on one hand, I kind of just sold on why I think it's a win-win to get the book. But what I didn't do, Ms. Liz, is tell people what the friggin' book is about.
Right. So let's get into the book.
I'm doing this in reverse. I'm reverse engineering this. But but what the book's about. So I wrote this book. I mean, the backstory is, I ask this question often. I won't reveal the question because it kind of gives away a bit of the book. But I ask this question often, and it inspired me to write the book, in the sense that it started planting a seed in my head and said, what if, like around this question. And it started getting me thinking about this concept. And so ultimately, early on, I knew what the beginning and the end of the book would be, and to some degree, a little bit of the middle. But I kept that in my head for a year. I just kept saying, I got to do something with that. And I told my wife, and she's like, oh my God, that concept, you got to do something with that. And I just was too busy to sit down and write a book. And I also am not like a speak to life book. Like, I'm not that guy. And I'm not, I probably will never be send a book off and get it written by AI type person. I'll probably never be get a ghostwriter. And the reason is because I actually love the organic process of writing the book. Like I, what Stephen King does and what he loves doing, I love that. Like just creating characters, bringing it to life. So this is different than other books though that I put out, because it is a fictional parable. So it's a fictional book, which I know what that means now. I never used to. But basically it's a parable. And so it's a story about two passengers on a plane, and old passenger, young passenger. The old passenger is described as like a Wayne Dyer-esque type wisdom-filled older dude. The young guy buys two tickets on first class, one next to him, so nobody's going to sit next to him, falls asleep, wakes up to the old guy sitting next to him. He's like, what are you doing here? The old guy says, well, they bumped me up because the plane was full. And so the young guy's like, I got to fall asleep and just not deal with this guy, until he discovers that the older guy has had some success in his life, financial success, wealth. And so the young guy wants to know how he did it. So now it's like, and that's kind of the character in general. Now he's willing to use the old guy to learn what he knows, even though he wanted to ignore him earlier. And so the plane ride, it's called The Flight That Changes Everything. But essentially, the plane ride is the reluctant passenger who doesn't really want to learn but wants to know the quick, short answer of how the guy made the money, and the older guy who really wants to share this wisdom it took him a lot of years to learn. And yeah, that's, without going any more than that, that's the nuts and bolts of the book. What's also unique about it is, having done 7,500 interviews with thought leaders, the book is actually the characters are kind of loosely a mixture of me, and it's basically me sharing what I've learned. So what we did in the book, which I don't know that many other, or if any other books have done it, is it's a fictional book that includes a whole bunch of real people. So for example, Les Brown said to me one time when I asked what he thought, what I thought, I asked him about synchronicity and said, what do you think synchronicity is? Or do you believe in it? And he said, I think synchronicity is God's way of staying anonymous. And that just floored me. And I don't know, I don't know if it's his quote or if he shared it, but he told, I was sitting in his living room and he told me that quote. And so in the story, Treb, the older, wiser guy, is a speaker. And he said he was back in the green room with Les Brown. And one time they got started talking about synchronicity. He said, what does it mean to you? And Les said what I just said. So what I'm getting at is, it's truly what Les said to me, but I'm positioning it as if Treb, the fictional character, was backstage with it. So I don't know that that's been done before.
Yeah. And as you were explaining the story, Corey, of the old guy and the young guy, I was like, I wonder if this has a little bit to do with Corey's life here.
It definitely does.
You know, because we want to get these stories out, but we want to have people engaged as well, right? So you're engaging the reader, but you're also saying, if you really know Corey, then you really know, oh, maybe Corey's putting some little nuggets in here that this is how he got to where he is today. Because Corey, you were the shy kid that, you know, that, and now look at you, you're an international speaker, you're known really well, you're a founder of Blue Talks, which we're going to talk about, the speaking program. Like, what got you into all of this? Because you were so laid back before, and now you're just like, let's roar, right? Let's go and get her. Like,
you know, I honestly would love to. I mean, like, I think it'd be so great if life was so, you know, cookie cutter that I could just say, this is my, was my intention. This is why I did it. This was my vision. Like, I would love to be able to say it was all just poetic and planned and all that kind of stuff, but it truly wasn't. Like, the stuff happened in real time. And it's like, you know, you hear, you know, let's say a musician, whenever they have two or three big albums out and they're touring and everything, they say, like, once it's done, they're like, when they're in it, it was so surreal that they're not really in it. Like, they're maybe enjoying it, but they're just like, this isn't a real thing. And then when they get out of it, they're like, oh my God, I can't believe all this stuff happened. And it's kind of like the same thing with me, in the sense that a lot of it was just, I had this drive. Once I found meaning in my life, I just had this drive to keep doing. And the doing for me, probably what drove that to some degree, was the impact. So the impact I was potentially making, meaning I would get a message from somebody and say, you know, like, I remember this one random message I got one time on LinkedIn. This person, I connected with them on LinkedIn because they came up as a suggested friend. And they said, I don't know if you remember me, but you came in and did a talk to my school whenever I was in whatever grade, and like grade 10 or something. And she said, it gave me the kick in the butt I needed to finish school, because I was ready to quit. And she said, that was X amount of years ago, and now I manage 5 rental companies. And I really think a lot of it was because of your talk. And there was this other guy, Zdenko is his name, very unique name. And he was an older guy. Like, when I say older, I mean, at the time he might've been 50, but I was like 25 at the time. And he became a client of mine. And he said, I don't know if you remember this, but you did a talk on Eastlink one time, Eastlink TV in Atlantic Canada. And he said, I saw you talking about how you retired at age 20 because you love what you do. And if you're not, if you love what you do, you're never working. So technically you retired. And he thought, if this 25-year-old can retire because he loves what he do, why can't I? And he said, that spurred me to switch careers. What I'm saying, you know, Miss Liz, is that that is probably what drove it, without me very consciously realizing it, was each time it might've been easy to go, this is a lot. then I would get a message like that, or somebody would come up at an event, or just something that said, you're impacting me. And in fact, so much so that that happened, that what I started doing is, before talks, people would say, what do you do to prepare for a talk? Like, what do you do before you get on stage, and how do you get over the fear and all that? And when early on, I used to meditate, but I found a problem with that, because when you meditate, you have to leave the table that you're at. And the problem with that is, if you're at the table with the meeting planner and everything, they start getting nervous. They start going, where did that guy disappear to? And so I realized I couldn't sit there and meditate in front of them. So I had to disappear to do that. So then I said, okay, I got to find a different solution for how I can prepare for the talk before I get on the stage. What I changed is, I started just telling myself, as they were reading my bio, because I'm like, I already heard my bio before, I don't need to focus on it. I started telling myself one time, something like that story about the girl with the school. I started telling myself, and it would always, not always, but it would often be different stories. And I would just remind myself of a time I had an impact on somebody. And then I would say to myself, that same girl tonight, you know, another version of that girl could be in the audience tonight. That's who I'm doing this for. And so I think that's what drove me, is I could literally see the impact I was having. And I don't think every job allows you to see the rewards of what you're doing, and the fact that you are actually impacting other people's lives. And I think when you say, how did that all happen? I think it's, I just had enough of those boosts that kept pushing me. And then also, I think there's a part of me that was, I'm not money driven, but I would think there's a part of me that was like experience driven, adventure driven. So in other words, I want to do that TEDx talk I keep hearing about, not because of the accolade of being a TEDx speaker, although I found out it was wise to have that accolade. It's done a lot for my career, but I didn't do it for that. And I also didn't do it saying, well, I'm going to get a whole bunch of paid speaking from it. I did it because I'm like, I want in on that. That sounds like a cool adventure. So I think my life has more been about stacking the adventures and experiences up, more so than and then the impact that comes from that, more so than money or achievements or accolades. But I've learned over the years, because I grew up in a small town and I was taught to never brag about anything or talk about yourself in any way, I have learned over the years I had to become a lot more comfortable talking about achievements and eventually owning them and being okay with that, because I realized pretty quickly I can have a bigger impact on somebody if they hear my achievements and say, oh, I want to listen to how that person did that. So I've learned that me actually talking about an achievement or an accolade actually helps me impact more lives. So I feel I'm actually being more selfish by not sharing it. So that was a long answer to say it probably happened because of impact, and because I kept hearing what difference I was making with one person even, and because I'm driven by, let's have another new experience that I haven't achieved already.
Yeah. Well, growing up in a small town, because I grew up in a small town as well, Corey, you know, we were raised, don't brag, right? Don't show off, because then you get these people, oh, you think you're better than, no, I don't think I'm better than you. I'm just driven more for the experience, more for the adventure, more for the what's out there. Like, why do I have to stay in this little small ship when I can go to the big ship if I really work hard to do it, right? Like, it's a lot to get over. When you come from a small town, it's a lot to come out and say, you know what? I did this, you know, because I'm that way too, Corey, where I hold back a lot. And I'm just like when people read the bio, right? And I'm just like, I know, who is that person? Like, no, that's not me. I didn't do all that. I'm just a small little town person. Like, what are they talking about, right?
Absolutely.
I understand that, Corey, because I come from a small town too. But you know what? We have to be proud of how much hard work we put into our journeys and into our stories, you know, because it is true. We do impact people more when we say, you know what? We came from this, but look what we did now. And it's not money driven, it's experience driven. And I'm so glad you said that, because everybody's like, Miss Liz, what keeps you going? And I'm just like, I just want to meet people. I just want to get into the big ship. I just want to experience life. We only have one life. Why do we have to stay in a small little ship boat? Like, let's get in the big ship. You know, let's play. Like, you can play with people that you never played with growing up with. Like, you know, have some fun with it. Corey, I really love your story, because it really resonates with my story. Like, you know, it resonates with the underdogs out there, the listeners out there that are saying, you know what, can I really do it? Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Look at Corey's story and look at what you can do. Like, Corey, what you've overcome and where you came from and where you are today You're not sitting here with all ego and saying, you know what, I did this, I did that. You're saying, you know what, I just wanted to try. I just wanted to get out there and go in the big ship, like, and have some fun too. You know, we can play in different sandboxes.
Yeah, well, and it's funny. This is a weird, super quick path to go down. But for an early part of my life, I always thought the only scenario with ego is that it's too big. And yeah. Meaning, like, I always thought the word ego is negative. And you know what? And I'm still not even saying it's not negative to some degree, depending on how big your ego is, let's say. But yeah. I also think there's another handicap, which is the opposite. So I actually wrote an article years ago on LinkedIn, I think in my newsletter, and I said, the bigger question is your ego too small? And what I meant by that wasn't like the word, like I wasn't saying like in the sense of a negative round yeah. ego. What I meant is, are you so scared and timid to share your big achievement you just had that, again, it's actually hurting you and you're not able to achieve the things that fill you up inside and fill your cup and what have you, because you're actually, I don't want to say thinking too small, but you're like literally, best way I can say it is you're not letting your light shine. Yep. And so, and like I said, it depends on how you view the word ego. If you view the word ego as only bad no matter what, then if I say, is your ego too small, you think, no, of course not. Like, you shouldn't have any ego. But it depends how you view the word. What I mean, and I'm meaning it as like your ability to tout that I'm here, I've arrived, I'm willing to do stuff, I'm going to make big things happen. Then to me, I think there's a healthy ego, and then there's like a, okay, this is way too much. And then there's also, I think maybe you need to bump up your ego a bit, because you don't even realize, and people don't realize how great you really are. So, I mean, I try, and part of that was a reframe for me, because I see so many people that say, well, I could never do what you did, to your point. Or, and I'll say, you talked about the small town thing and, you know, us as people, like, not going, look at me, I did this, versus I'm so happy that I was able to do this, two different things. Yep. I will say, my wife often, well, I'll hear her talk and she goes, she'll be talking to people. And she's like, yeah, and he was born in this really tiny town. And she's like talking me up. And honestly, I don't know if this is good or bad, but I honestly forget that part of my background, like that I came up in a small town. So I don't even view it as a hindrance anymore. And the world has changed a lot since I came up too, in the sense that you can make it in a small town much easier now than before, because the world's all connected. But as yeah. you know, 25 years ago, that was just starting. So I, you know, it might look amazing because of the fact that I did it at a different time, but I never look at it like a small town boy did big or what have you. I literally just look at it like wherever I lived, I basically did the best that I could, meaning like there's four agreements. One of them is always be your best. So every day I just always tried to be the best Corey I could be, only competing with Corey, nobody else. And I never viewed it like, uh-oh, I'm in a small town, this can't happen. And maybe that helped me not think I can't have this because I'm in a small town. But I didn't realize, this is where I'm getting at, there's a long tangent to get around to the fact that I didn't realize even my wife had the thought process that it's really hard to make it in a small town, like to make it, to go and have these adventures I've had when you were born in a small town. But I only realized that after she started talking to people, and then people would start commenting on Facebook, like, I'm so amazed at what you were able to do, even though you were born in this little tiny town. I never really thought of it as that fantastical, but it's funny how many other people still view it that way whenever you grow up in a small town and then maybe go and have these big adventures that seem kind of grandiose. So going back to your point, I never view it that way. So maybe that's why I don't say, look what I did. It's because yeah. I never view it that way. I just really look at it like I'm living my life.
And I think that's the way that we, you know, that's the way I look at it too, Corey, is I don't go like, oh, I did this, I did this, I did this. You know what? I tried. I'm just trying. I'm just that girl that wants to try, that wants different, that doesn't want what the little small town just wants to hold down, right? And there's nothing wrong with small towns, but the small towns can come to big towns. We can sit with different people. We can join each other, and we can bring that big table to the small town. Like, you know what I mean? Like, we can play together. We can get together. And it's almost like what me and Sandy said this afternoon, is the connection. You know, joining one another, stop the division and connect, you know, because it's just, if you're born in a small town, no, you can't be a big person. You can't do all of this. You can't, you know, all these can'ts. I tell people, take the word can, take the apostrophe out and put try. Can try. We can all try to do something, right? I really don't like the word can't, because just can't, I don't know it. You know, it's like a can you can't open, right? So you want to open that can. So Corey, I want to get into the Blue Talk, because I've seen some of the incredible stuff that you're doing with Blue Talk and I want to get into the events, because you have three incredible events that are coming up in April and one in July, I believe, that I found. So I want to know a little bit about Blue Talk. So what is Blue Talk?
So Blue Talks started 4.5 years ago. And honestly, okay, so it started figuratively, literally, legally 4.5 years ago. But I believe Blue Talk started 22 years ago. So what do I mean by that? 22 years ago, I started as a speaker and I had no mentors. And I thought speaking was going to be easy because I was in sales. I thought I could sell myself. And I jokingly now say, I thought, like we always hear, I would build it and they would come. But I started building it. Nobody even heard the hammer. Nobody heard me building. And so I said,
it was a peaceful build.
And so I said, if I can ever change that for future people, that's what I want to do. And so that's why I say I think Blue Talks technically started 22 years ago, because it was the seed that if I can ever change this, I will. Then I went on my merry way and really went all into my speaking career. And, you know, that was like 18 plus years of like, this is how I put the food on the table. This is how I impact lives. I was all in on speaking and I had my side hustles. Like I always had a podcast or a magazine or what have you. But my point is that I had that seed of I want to help other people when I get there. But then I think I had to get there, meaning I had to. I'm one of those people, I will say, this is a whole, I won't go down this rabbit hole, but one of my pet peeves is people putting an ad out and saying, let me show you how to make $1 million when they haven't made $1 million. And so that's a really, my wife will tell you that's the, I'm pretty chill. She'll tell you that's my only pet peeve. And I even have people I'd work with, clients who do that. Like they'll sign up for something. Let's say I teach people how to speak, let's say, and get paid. They'll sign up for that. And then a week later, they're offering a course of how to get paid to speak. But they've never done it before. They've spoken once and now they're teaching people. And that's my pet peeve. Now, I also, at the same time, I believe live and let live. So I'm not out calling them out. Now I have done talks about that. Like Living the Unfiltered Life was one of my Blue Talks. And it was talking about how, we need to live an unfiltered life and stop only showing the filtered side of it. Like, you know, it's easy to stand in front of a Rolls Royce and pretend it's yours and put an ad up, but we don't see when the person comes out and has their shotgun and says, get off my lawn and get away from my car. And then we find out it's really not your car. So what I'm saying is that Blue Talks for me was, I want to help people do what it was hard for me to do at the beginning. But going back to the point is, I believe I had to put in the sweat and tears to actually have achieved it myself, to then teach others. So I'm not one of those guys, anything I've ever taught. So I've had people for years saying, you should teach author courses and training. And I can tell you, based on the path and journey I've went, that I'm competent enough to teach author courses. I also had many people saying, you should teach podcasting, because I started with an OG show, like literally almost 20 years ago was my first show. And that was like, we weren't even calling it podcasting. iTunes didn't even, like podcasts on iTunes didn't even exist. And so yeah, I could probably teach podcasting. But my thing is, I'm not going to go in. Now those two things I have enough experience in now to do it. But people were asking me to do that after my first book. And what I'm saying is, to me, I don't want to teach something until I'm closer to the end of the book. I don't want to start teach something when I'm on page two and start teaching you stuff on page one. And I find a lot of people do that. And let's be honest, a lot of times it's because they're trying to figure out, how can I bring in money? And yeah, Money drives that sometimes. Having said all of that, that ties into Blue Talks. I said I want to launch that when I was ready. And maybe it was meant to be almost 20 years later until I felt I was ready. Now, I had signs of that before I started teaching people how to get paid to speak after about 10 years. But it was a self-study program. Then people started coming to me saying, how'd you land 3 TED Talks? So, you know, we put together a branded talk program to help people land branded talks. And then 4.5 years ago, people were coming to me saying, I wish there was a spiritual TEDx stage. That was one group. And the other group was like, I wish there was a done for you service where somebody could like get me on the stage, get me filmed, get me the footage I can use forever, get me to become a best-selling author. Like basically help me do all those things that normally it might take me 10 years to figure it out on my own. It took me 15 years. But, you know, we have people now that work with us that in 4 months, they've spoken at MIT, Columbia. They've been a best-selling Barnes & Noble and Amazon author and stuff like that. They've been featured on Apple, Roku, and Amazon. But you can imagine if you're an expert and I go to your website and see that, that's a lot of credibility. So one hand of what we're doing is creating that credibility. But for the average viewer or listener of Blue Talks, what it is we created this thing that I say is like TEDx meets chicken soup for the soul. And I've said that it's like if the two of them got married and had a baby on the honeymoon, we'd be the baby that crawled back. And so what I mean by that is on our stage, so blue stands for Business Life Universe. So you could see a business talk and message, a life story. And then the third talk could be a story about synchronicity, which is the universe. So spirituality. And so probably the difference is we added in the spirituality, which I know now there was a hunger for. So Blue Talks, we launched 2019. We did 3 live events. We filmed them. The plan was we're going to release a video every week like TEDx does. And that's going to be our brand. And then this little thing a lot of people here might have heard of happened called COVID. And then all of a sudden now we're launching a live event brand when everybody's saying no more live events. And so we had to decide if we were going to continue or if we were going to just fulfill the promises and move on. And what I ultimately decided, I ran it by a couple other people, but we had to add more elements or platforms if we were going to keep going. So we added a book series, which really I now credit as keeping us afloat when we couldn't do live events. But we also added in virtual events, which were really popular, obviously, during COVID, and a podcast. And so for a while, it was those three, the book series, the podcast, and the virtual. And one of the things that kept us going is we weren't just offering people a package in the book. We were saying, we'll also feature you on the podcast and our virtual event. So it was a bigger package. That kept us going until events came back around. And since events came back around, we've now, I think last week, we did our 30th event, live event. Wow. So we've done 27 since COVID, which is pretty cool when you think of the fact that for more than two of those four years, COVID meant you couldn't do any live events. So we were like 2 years, we couldn't do any. So technically we've done like 27 live events in 2 years, which is more than one a month. So those events, what they look like is we'll run our Blue Talks events at places like Cambridge, Oxford, UCLA, Stanford, MIT, Harvard, Columbia, basically a lot of Ivy League or epic universities. And it's not about, okay, wait, I spoke there. It's more so about, wow, I got to live a dream and speak there. Like, in other words, for me, somebody asked me today in an interview, what are some of the biggest talks you've done? And I said, well, it depends how you define big. Because I think when you're asking me the question, you're meaning biggest audiences. Yep. And so, you know, I've had talks with audiences of thousands upon thousands. But when I think of the word big, I think meaningful. And so I said, for me, big was Harvard, Columbia. And I said, the reason it was is because I was that guy, like a lot of us, told by my vice principal, I'll never mount anything. So when I'm at that hallowed stage and speaking at Harvard, that to me is like a validation of this, you know, I'm doing what I'm meant to do. I told him another time that happened for me is when I started speaking at universities and then they would start bringing me in to speak to the professors and teachers. And I'm like, so this vice principal said, you'll never amount to anything. And now I'm teaching professors at university. Like that was, for me, those are monumental moments. But Blue Talks gives people that. So like, I remember one time, one of our speakers said, my parents said I was never smart enough to go to Harvard. And then they bought a sticker to put in the back of the car when they got home saying, I went to Harvard. Because they went to Harvard to speak. But so from that end, that's one of the things we do at Blue Talks. We also film the talk, edit it. So obviously the speakers and experts can share that talk forever. We also, for the listeners and viewers, people that want to learn about Blue Talks and watch powerful talks, you can go to our websites and we're on Apple TV, Roku, Amazon, Google, United Airlines, YouTube, Connect TV, C-Suite Network, AM/FM 247, which is 22 FM stations, 2.3 million listeners. So you can hear us and watch us a lot of places. YouTube is probably for most people the easiest one to go to. But you can go there and you can see a talk about somebody going through recovery and how it changed their life. Somebody that battled with family and felt like they were left out to, you know, dry with it from their family. Another person talking about what they don't teach you at business school. And so what I mean is it's really a mixed bag of all that: business messages, life stories, journeys, spiritual talks, what have you. That's kind of what Blue Talks is. And I kind of implied that we have four platforms, which is the live events, which people can come and see. We're going to be charging again soon, but we went to a free for a bit to give it a try. So it's free to attend right now. Our next one, you mentioned dates. Our next one's in New York on the 17th and 18th. We're at Columbia. And I don't know how many people will be there, but I know on our Eventbrite, I think we're close to 100 registered, so attendees. So usually we try for intimate, like TEDx, where it's like 50 to 100 is our sweet spot. Also in April, we're going to the University of Miami. We were going to go to the University of Central Florida as well, but the dates were conflicting. Like we weren't able to, anyway, so I think that one we've kind of moved away from, but we have the Miami one and the Columbia one are for certain. MIT in May. June, we're going to Halifax, Nova Scotia. Very first time in my neck of the woods, which is kind of ironic, but we're going to be actually close to home. I'm excited about that because I lived there for 12 years, so it's like a going home for me. And the day that we do that event, the first of the 2 days, is the day my book officially is launched, meaning like,
oh, wow,
it's available now, but the day that you can order it and it's in your hand is June 25th, and that's the first day of the Halifax one. July 10th, which you mentioned, July, is our first visit to Northwestern, which is in Chicago. And let's see, August, we're at Cambridge in the UK. And then October, we're at Oxford in the UK. And then I think we probably have maybe one or maybe two more others we'll add to finish out the year. So that's, I think I full circled. That's what Blue Talks is all about.
Well, that's pretty cool. You know, Corey, I'm so proud of you. Like, you really came a far way. And, you know, for all the listeners out there, we have a lot of comments coming in saying, wow, and inspiring, encouraging. You know, Corey, it's stories like yours that makes a difference, because you're showing people that you can make a difference. You can change your lives. You know, we don't need to stay in the small town. We can play in the big town too. It's really, truly inspiring. And we have a lot of comments coming in. Wow. Thank you for sharing. Corey, if they'd like to be a speaker for Blue Talk, how would they go about doing that?
Honestly, I'll give you the shortcut, because there's a longer version, which is like giving you a website, you know, going on there, reaching out, that type of thing. But I want to give people the very shortcut, especially I mentioned the book website, and I don't like to give people too many websites, because I find if you give too many, people go nowhere. So what I will give people is my email address. It's an easy way. So just reach out to me and say, hey, I'd like to know more about Blue Talks and how I can be involved. And so the email address is, my own is Corey, which is, you can see the spelling on the screen here, Corey, at Blue Talks, and blue is BLU, as I mentioned, without the E, talks with an S on the end, .com. So Corey at BlueTalks.com, send me an email, let me know that you saw me here, say I want to learn more about Blue Talks, and I can tell you a little bit about it and maybe jump on a call. We'll figure it out however it plays out.
And what final message do you have for everybody today, Corey?
I think probably the one, well, I'll say it this way, I'll back it up. But for me, the one difference maker in my life from who I was, you know, pre-Corey to current Corey, I think was when I found my calling, meaning in my life. You know, I basically define it as living every day on purpose. And so I would recommend to people, if you don't have meaning yet, you feel, or you haven't found a purpose, even though you may think, I don't have time for that, or it's not worth it, or you're thinking, you know, he's probably just like one of these people that's just like affirmations in the mirror, like I'm good enough, I'm strong enough, like thinking that this is artificial, or he's probably not really that happy. I've said to people, and these are people that know me intimately or know me for years, I put it out there years ago, if you ever see me on a day where I'm like miserable and unhappy and rude to people or whatever, you let me know and I'll cut you a check for $1,000. Nobody has cashed that in yet. And that's authentic. Like what I am like right now is authentic. I do believe it's possible to fake it till you make it. And I do believe it's possible to, you know, do affirmations and eventually feel what you're saying, but that's not who I am right now. This is all me. And so I would say it might take work to live on purpose, but it's the best work you'll ever do because of the reward at the end. And what I will say is it's backed up. So this isn't just Corey talking this way. Here's the backup to the fact that living on purpose and finding meaning in your life is game changing. Dr. Viktor Frankl, who wrote Man's Search for Meaning, that book was about how he survived the Holocaust because he had meaning. So he said all these other people that were there with him were basically passing away and dying. And he felt the only difference was he had something to get back to. He had meaning in his life. And he was a psychiatrist and like a talk therapist. And whenever that, when he survived and felt that's why he survived, he changed his whole practice to where what he did instead was he would sit with people and help them find meaning in their life. He said when he started doing that, talk therapy was over. He was seeing people get cured. And I mean, that's a bold statement, but I'm not a doctor to back this up. But he was seeing people have transformations around depression, anxiety, mental health, that when they found meaning in their life, I won't say it disappeared, but everything seemed to change. So, I mean, this is a guy who spent his whole life doing this work. But if you want more proof about living on purpose, check out the Blue Zones. So there's the Blue Zones of Happiness, the Blue Zones of Longevity. And one is the Blue Zones for Longevity is about what the longest living people have in common. And it was a study done by Dan Buettner, which was commissioned by National Geographic. And then there's the Blue Zones of, I think I said the first one was Longevity. The other one's Happiness. And basically, it's what are the happiest people in the world have in common and the longest living. Interestingly enough, Ms. Liz, the one thing that overlaps, I think he has found 9 things on each. One thing, the only one thing that fully overlaps is living on purpose. So the happiest people in the world and the longest living people in the world, the one thing they have in common is they found a purpose or meaning and they live that way every day. And Dr. Viktor Frankl survived a Holocaust and helped other people battle their mental illness by finding meaning in their life. So if it takes you 3 months to find purpose, knowing that only 5% of people is the stat I've heard will ever find it, I think it's worth those 3 months. And what I will say is the journey's not as big as you think. You know, it's not a plug to get my book. It's like the book's like 16 US, so I'm not trying to make big money off it. But in the book, we go into a bit of that. In my other book, The Book of Why and How, it's all around that. But we actually teach exercises. And just as a teaser, it can be as simple as sitting with a pen and a paper and really going inward and asking yourself, what is the thing I would do if money was an issue? What is the thing I would do if I won the lottery? What is the thing that people tell me I'm really great at? What is the thing I don't watch the clock? When I was a kid and somebody convinced me to stop doing it, what did I stop doing? Because I need to go back and figure out what that was. Make that list. That'll start giving you hints toward your passion. Break down the things that you have to do to take that action. Give yourself rewards for each step. Take action. And you might find yourself doing what you love on an adventure and finding a passion in 3 months. And what I found is passion is the gateway to purpose. So passion's what you do, could be photography, what have you. The why you do it is the purpose. And that might take you a little longer. But at least if you start doing the what you do, eventually the purpose will appear in my experience. So I didn't mean to go that far down, but basically live on purpose. And there's a little exercise in about 1 minute that I should spend a half hour or a half a day on. But that's one exercise you can do to at least start the adventure. But at the very least, just start being boldly adventurous and doing stuff. And I think you're going to have a better chance of finding a purpose and meaning than the person that sits at home and doesn't take adventures and do stuff.
Right. Just try.
Just try.
Just try. Well, thank you so much, Corey. I had a blast. And, you know, I really wish you all the best with all of your events that are coming up. If anybody would like to know more, they can reach Corey at thatspeakerguy.com as well. I have on the screen here, but Corey, if you'd like to give a last shout out for how they can reach you and connect with you, and then we're going to close this tea time up and we're going to come back next week and do the same stuff all over again.
Amazing. Well, thank you so much. And thank you everybody for joining us. And so the last thing I would say is if you want to get, I talked a little bit about this book, The Enlightened Passenger. I can tell you it's honestly the book cost me thousands and maybe hundreds of thousands of dollars to learn what I share in the book. That's something that's still talking about amazing to me. That's still something amazing to me all throughout the years is that we can tap into the knowledge of people that charge maybe $1 million to consult with people for like Brendan Burchard. I just heard him say that he works with billionaires. Well, you can imagine what they pay him per year. And I think it's fascinating that we can get the same knowledge in a book for $20 from Brendan Burchard. So when I say this, I put a lot of effort, sweat, and tears into this book. I'll make the case that at least look, you know, go to the website and check it out and see if it calls out to you. So the one thing I would say is check that out. A lot of what we've been talking about today and a lot of what I didn't share is in that book. And that's, as I mentioned earlier, at thisisthebook.com. And I mentioned that as of tomorrow, tomorrow being Friday, by the end of the day, the website will be up where you can get free resources, free bonuses with it. And then I said as well, in terms of where you can follow me, of course, on social anywhere, Google me on Google. I'm very Googleable. I don't think that's a word because the name is very unique. And so feel free to Google me and then follow in your preferred place there. Or as I mentioned, I'm always open to that. Send me an email, send me a note, even if it's just to say, hey, I heard you on the show and this was cool what you said here, or even I disagree with what you said here. But feel free to send me a note at Corey, C-O-R-E-Y, at Blue Talks, that's talks with an S on the end, .com.
Well, thank you so much, Corey. And thank you again for joining me and having a good cup of tea. And we'll be back next week, same place, same time, and we'll be sharing two TEAs. And then Miss Liz has a surprise. I have a surprise guest that's coming in the middle of April that you didn't see on the press release that will be returning. It is a returning guest. That's all I'm going to let you know. If you guys want to put it in the comments who you think is coming, you can do that as well. And thank you again, Corey, for joining me. And thank you to all the viewers and listeners. And if you're listening to the replay, please push hashtag replay and let me know where you're tuning in from, because I always like to know where you're coming in from as well. Share this tea time and check out Miss Liz's YouTube channel. Go over there and ring that bell. And let's just keep spilling and making a mess with a lot of good TEAs out there. And I'll see everybody next Thursday, same time, same place, and we'll do it all over again.
Amazing. Thanks, everybody.